Thomas Elementary School in Racine, and Urban Teacher Prep Program Director Siobhan Williams. And this is, you're listening to WGTD HDFM. I'm your host, Karen Sconzert. This is Education Matters. You can listen again at WGTD.org, or you can find us on the Education Matters Facebook page for WGTD and join our discussion there. Thank you.
You've been listening to Education Matters, heard each Saturday morning at 10:30 on WGTD HD, Kenosha, Racine, Elkhorn, and Lake Geneva. Archive programs are available on our website, WGTD.org, and you're invited to continue the discussion on the Education Matters Facebook page. Support comes from Gateway Technical College, open for learning with a new set of hybrid online and hands-on associate degree and certificate programs delivered safely for summer and fall. Financial aid available. Browse gtc.edu or chat online, email, or call Student Services now.
I'm Gregory Berg, reminding you that The Morning Show is not only broadcast Monday through Friday, but available as a podcast 7 days a week. On Saturday, I'll rebroadcast my conversation with Mark Kreidler, author of Six Good Innings, How One Small Town Became a Little League Giant. And on Sunday, Beth Lissick's lighthearted and intriguing look at the world of self-help with her book, Helping Me Help Myself. Some listening pleasure and diversion during these trying times. Support for The Morning Show comes from Carthage College, home of the Aspire program.
This is WGTD-HD, Kenosha, Racine, Elkhorn, and Lake Geneva. You're listening to Community Matters, a program that highlights various local issues and organizations. It's co-hosted by Lenny Aquinta, a nonprofit manager, fundraiser, and consultant, and Laura Sumner Kuhn, a former journalist at the Racine Journal-Times, who currently serves as an adjunct instructor at UW Parkside. Community Matters shares its time slot with the WGTD Radio Theater. And now, here's today's program.
Good morning. This is Laura Sumner Kuhn, your host in today's Community Matters show on WGTD, and I'm delighted today to have as my guest Jessica McPhail, the director of the Racine Public Library, who can tell us about some of the new things to look forward to in the way that the library serves the community, and to kind of offer us a perspective of how the library has changed over the last few years. Jessica, welcome to the show this morning.
Thank you so much for having me.
I'm delighted you could be with us via Skype during these days of being cautious in the coronavirus. So this is a safe interview. Very socially distanced. But that's something that you're kind of used to right now, because the library certainly had to go through many procedural changes in order to serve the community these days. Maybe we could start there. Maybe you could tell us how the Racine Public Library has recently prepared to reopen to serve the community during these times of safer at home.
Sure. I'll start with Friday, March 13th, because that was the day we were told we were going to be closed effective Monday, March 14th. And so that whole day was a scramble as we tried to figure out the best way to close up things and still get the holds that people had already requested out to them and give the community one more chance to come down and check out anything they could. We removed all limits on checkouts, and boy, were we busy that Saturday. We had lines and lines and lines. It was myself and the two managers doing the checkouts, and it was a wonderful, wonderful day.
Do you have any idea how many people passed through just from circulation numbers?
We think we checked out, gosh, I should have that in front of me, but it was something like 3 people per minute. It was crazy.
Oh, my goodness. Well, that had to be reaffirming, though, because in these days of technology, I think people wonder whether or not a library is obsolete. And you and your team have certainly have proven that not to be the case, and we'll get into all kinds of reasons why today during that show. So what else did you have to do in order to prepare to close and to reopen again recently?
Well, to reopen to curbside pickup, the managers met and we discussed every nitpicking detail to make sure we hadn't forgotten anything. We tried it out and it seemed to work. So the first couple of weeks, we asked people to call and schedule a pickup time. We had 1,800 items waiting for people to be picked up. And we figured out that it would take about 80 hours to get all of those checked out and on the road to people to go home. But we managed to get through that in about 2 weeks. And right now in the third week of curbside pickup, we are not scheduling pickups. You're just coming, calling us from your car or just walking up to the tent outside the library on Lake Avenue and telling us what you have on reserve and we go get it for you.
That is incredible. And people can make those requests online, can't they?
Yes, you can place holds right now.
Okay, so just going to the website and requesting a hold works. They could also call and do the same?
They could also call and do the same. They can also use the app called BookMine, which works on your iPhone or your Android.
So multiple ways in order to get something that's on, to get it put on reserve for the library.
That's right.
For them. When do you foresee having service open in further steps? Do you foresee that happening once the Safer at Home order is lifted at the end of the month?
That's what libraries are talking about all across the United States, because the whole service of a library is y'all come in, you all wander around, you stay as long as you want, you look at books, you look at newspapers, you touch everything and put it back down. And we're reacting to that service model with screams of horror because that's exactly how this virus is transmitted. So right. It's a very complex issue to consider fully reopening. We think probably a phased approach, a limited service approach will be the way we'll have to go. And of course, we'll be directed by the CDC and WHO and the health department to make sure we're following the safe protocols that they make sure we require.
Right. I can't even imagine. And then I understand from looking at your directives on the website that when people have checked materials out from the library, that they not bring them back to the table where they first received them, that they drop them off in the drop-off boxes. And then I would presume that there's a ritual that your staff has to go through in order to protect the next person who handles those materials from becoming infected. What do you do to sanitize books?
We use masks and gloves as our personal protection when we are emptying the book drops. Those materials stay in quarantine for 72 hours. Then they are checked in by, again, staff using masks and gloves. So we're protecting ourselves and our patrons at the same time. The 72 hours was, that was a guideline from, I think it was the CDC originally, but right now there's a research going on directed by the American Library Association and the Institute for Museums and Library Science, as well as Battelle, the pharmaceutical company. They're testing all kinds of library materials. And within the next couple of weeks, we should have a pretty good idea what types of quarantine we should put these items in, depending on whether it's plastic, which might be a toy or a game, or whether it's cardboard, which would be a hardbound book, or whether it's a paperback.
Well, certainly makes life a little more complicated for your whole team.
Yes, but you know what? We are getting so good at changing procedures on a dime.
Well, good for you. I can't even imagine. Is your whole staff up and running at the library, or do you have some people who are on furlough during this time?
We right now are using every staff member to do curbside check-in. The schedule is that you are on one day and off the next, and that you're working with the same small crew, two or three people, because we know that with the spread of the virus, if one person gets sick, the other two members of the crew need to be quarantined. Right. And this way, we can continue the operation without coming to a screeching halt.
Wow. You really had to do some quick thinking on all of those fronts. So I commend you for your ability to do that and yet serve the community so well. Why don't you tell us a little bit about library patrons in Racine in general? You've been here for quite a while. What could you tell us about people who use the library?
People who use the library are passionate about using the library, and they never hesitate to tell us what they want, when they want it, how soon they want it. It's great. Somebody starting to read one author wants to read every book by that author, and sometimes they think we know all those books by heart. We have a wide variety. There's parents who take out things for their children. There are parents who read to their children who are too young to read themselves. We have teens who are reading through the graphic novels and anime. We have people who only watch DVDs. We have people who read Westerns, romance, mystery, biographies, history. So you name the subject, and I know people who are passionate about that subject. It's great.
That's really something. In an age of technology, I think there's this misinformation that people no longer are reading books, or they're no longer thinking about visiting the library. And yet, the library has changed along with our society and societal needs. Other than getting books in DVDs, which have long been available at the library, you have other technological ways to serve Racine patrons as well. Can you maybe tell us some of those things?
Sure. And when you said your list just now, I realized I forgot about our music lovers who are checking out CDs, and the people who listen to books on audio. So sure. There's a wide range of what I call readers, even if you're listening to a book. Some of the things that we have that people are really enjoying that are, I would say, newer technology. We do have video games. We also have Kindles, so you can read your book on an electronic e-reader. We have Kindles that are preloaded with titles that you might enjoy. And we have a whole range of, it's called the Library of Things. But it's because we're a library and we have things that's the name they came up with. Not very creative, but that's what they're calling it. Things like binoculars, magnifiers, radon detectors, thermometers for cooking, all kinds of things that you might only need once, but when you need it, you really need it. And also things that you want to try out, like VR glasses, headsets. We have converters so that if you have cassettes, I was about to say old cassettes, ancient cassettes, you can translate those into CDs. If you have VHS tapes, again, ancient technology, you can convert those to DVDs with the machines we have for you to check out. You can also check out laptops. You can check out hotspots, Wi-Fi hotspots, so you can get the internet at your house.
How many of those do you have, Jessica? Those are something that is, I would imagine, in great demand right now as everybody's working from home, and not everybody might have their own access to the internet.
We have not enough. They are all checked out, and they all have waiting lists on them.
Really?
Wow. Yes.
Can you give us an idea of how many, I don't know how you would quantify traffic at the library annually, but you must do some kind of annual report that either is by items circulated or how many patrons you think have used the library. Is there any sense of that you can offer our listeners today?
Yeah, in fact, this is funny. I'm actually finishing up our annual report for the Department of Public Instruction. Because of the city of Racine's malware attack, we haven't had access to the financial data until just this week. And we now refer to the malware or ransomware attack as the old crisis, because that brought the city to its knees for weeks. But as soon as the COVID-19 virus hit, that became like nothing.
Wow.
In the annual report, we're looking at a visitor count of right around 6,000 people per week.
Oh my goodness.
And checking out about 750,000 items per year.
Wow, I would never have guessed that. That's amazing. Well, and you've come to Racine quite a while ago from a library elsewhere, and you've had a unique perspective to see how the Racine community and the Racine Library have grown and changed during the time that you're here. Can you give us a little perspective of that?
Sure. Racine is a very unique community, and the library is even more unique. There's not another comparable library in the state. And by that, I mean we serve about 140,000 people from one building. There's no other community of this size that has only one building. We also have a bookmobile, but that still doesn't replace a physical facility. This library is located as far east as you can get in Racine. We've got a beautiful lake view, but we serve people who live all the way out to the interstate, all the way up to Milwaukee County, and all the way down to Kenosha County, from the building as far east as you can get. Another part of the unique aspect of Racine is its multicultural history, the diverse history, all the people that made their way up during the Great Migration to escape the racial terror of the South, and all the people who came up from Mexico, or what was Mexico and then became the United States, but they still feel that they're Mexican, as well as all the immigrants who came from every place, like the Danes and the Norwegians and the Germans and the Polish. They came to Invention City because this place was hopping. This was the place to be to invent something. And once you invented it, there was this tremendous network of supporters who would either manufacture your product or sell you the supplies that you needed to make your product or be able to distribute your product. It was an incredible place, and it still has that history.
Mm-hmm.
Still has that impact.
Right. Well, you're kind of touching on some things that I find jump out at me in the library's new mission. You have undergone quite an involved process to come up with a strategic plan to guide the library into the future. And the strategic plan is available on your website for anybody who wants to take a look at that. But you have some very ambitious goals, and you really broaden the role of a library in a community and declare it in a way that I think people don't immediately go to in their heads when they think about the public library. And so I just like to take a few seconds to read the new mission. The Racine Public Library's mission is to lift up the lives of the people of the Racine community by embracing community diversity, promoting inclusion, creating opportunity, and by supporting the development of community literacy through a love of literature, learning, and civic engagement. What an incredible mission.
Isn't that great?
It really is. And it really points us to a role, as I've mentioned, that we don't think about the library performing, and that is to be kind of the convener of everybody, to lift up everybody and creating a sense of belonging and inclusion and opportunity to develop your skills, whatever they might be, or your interests by visiting the library. It's really a broad and far-reaching statement. And then the strategic plan talks about how you hope to go about that. I know that your mission and the plan is the culmination of a lot of data gathering that you and your team have done. Maybe you could talk a little bit about how you came to develop the strategic plan and how you determined that this indeed was your mission.
What we did that was absolutely stupendous, I think, was that the library board hired David Jakes. He works out of Chicago, and he works mainly with schools and educational facilities, but he was our consultant for this long-range plan, and he really dug into the community. And then he would come back to the staff, and he'd test out, well, is this what you think? Does this ring true? He interviewed the board several times, and he kept coming back to the fact that the library acts as a social service agency, that we are here to support the people of the community. He said, you guys don't know that you're a library. You think you are a social service agency. And he tested that out. And it's true, because when people come in with whatever question they have, we try to answer it. The people that we serve, you know, our community, our free and reduced lunch is a huge percentage. We have huge unemployment. We have a lot of people right now who are hurting, who are hungry, who don't have a place to sleep that's safe. We have a lot of people like that. And every person here at the library is an empathetic, sympathetic, and go-getter kind of person. They are going to get the answer for that person, no matter the person's background or what they look like or anything like that. And you know what, Laura? This comes from the history of this library. The very first, I think it was the mayor who made a speech when this building was built. And he said, this library serves every person. Every person. When the first Carnegie Library was built in Racine, Andrew Carnegie, the steel magnate, he spent a fortune putting libraries into communities. His goal and his mission was to educate the mass unwashed people. The building had to be a shining beacon for the community. You had to walk up the steps to see the librarian. The librarian was the fount of all knowledge and all expertise, and you came to the librarian as a supplicant. We are completely different. We are on an equal level playing field with the people who come in the door, and we work together to find solutions and to find answers to people's questions. It's quite a transformation.
It is a real mind shift in what role you play in the community as a library. I want to take a minute just to clue in our listeners, if you've just joined us, that this is WGTD's Community Matters. My guest today is Jessica McPhail, who's the director of the Racine Public Library. And to that end, I guess I would like to kind of segue a little bit into what you're talking about in terms of serving every person and reverencing the dignity of every person and upholding the beauty of the diversity of this city. I know in the last few years, you personally, as well as in your role as librarian, you've really challenged thinking that might be non-inclusive, to kind of broaden people's minds about the contributions all people have made in our society, and to address issues of racial inequality and racial barriers that might exist in our community that perhaps haven't been challenged before. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Sure, and I want to make sure you know and the listeners know, I am not the only one. This topic for white Americans, and I'm white, this topic has been, I guess, really causing a lot of unrest for us white people, as we see that even though we think everybody's equal, we don't act it out, and the rules are different if you're white than if you're a person of color. And as that flows into your consciousness, you become uncomfortable and you want to do something about it. And so we are, many, many white Americans are doing something about it by writing letters, by making calls, by making themselves uncomfortable, having uncomfortable conversations with their families, with their friends, with people that they don't know, but they're getting together with because they have the same cause. I see a real change coming.
And you've done some things also at the library to try to foster those kinds of conversations as well, haven't you?
Yes, as a part of Coming Together Racine, that's an anti-racist group that was formed back in 2005. The library became part of that. That first meeting was hosted by the YWCA, whose mission is to eliminate racism and empower girls. And the YWCA had an event called Race to Race, Face to Face. Out of that meeting, a lot of organizations decided this had to change in Racine. The statistics were abysmal. And so we've worked hard. We started by showing movies every month with themes of race and racial inequity. Then we moved into reading books together and discussing them. And there is now a weekly anti-racism book group. They meet Mondays over Zoom now. They meet Mondays at 1 p.m. And right now they're reading a book by Henry Louis Gates called Stony the Road.
Goodness. Can anybody join that conversation?
Absolutely.
Good. And I would imagine all they need to do is contact the library to learn how.
They can contact the library. It's also on the library's calendar on the website. And I think the Zoom information is on there, but if it's not, give us a call.
Great. Well, I can see how that is wrapped up in your ideals for the strategic plan, in the mission to be inclusive, in your manifesto that follows out of your mission and your vision, and some of the next steps that you'd like to take as a public institution. Can you walk us through some of the high points of the strategic plan?
Sure, and I can tell you we've done some the plan is divided into things that David Jakes thought that we should do immediately. And the first thing he thought was, and we agree, the board has approved this, create an irresistible destination. So the first thing we did was to develop a plan based on the pandemic and put that on the website to make sure that employees and patrons feel safe. The second one is to build a more cohesive library team. And so we are calling ourselves, all of us, team members. We're trying to break down any divisions there might be between people who serve mainly adults, people who serve mainly children, people who work at the circulation desk, people on the bookmobile, people who work in the back of the house doing supportive activities like ordering books and processing, cataloging. So we are all library team members. Right away we had the pandemic hit, and we are doing curbside pickup. That took team members from every department, so we're working on that. Another one is to serve as the community storyteller. And that's been fascinating. We've been doing some of that for several years. We had a program called The Human Library, where you could check out a person who was not like you and learn from them about their background. That was pretty successful. And now we're doing oral storytelling, where again, we're interviewing people to capture their memories and capture their experiences.
What a wonderful idea. And you know, you and I were talking a little bit about this before the show, about the role of the library as kind of like the social curator, the community cultural curator, to be able to preserve the story of the community as it's ongoing and lived out, and to reflect back on it. And this is a prime example of how you are that curator of a community's culture or community's livelihood. You know, it's life. That's fascinating. So if anybody wanted to check into those stories, where would they find them?
They could contact us, and we'll certainly tell everybody about the stories that we've collected so far. We're also looking for more people who want to tell their stories. I was talking to a woman earlier today who referred to the area that she was familiar with, as she said, they called it the Mexican Beach because it flooded. It was also called the Barrio. Oh. Who knew that? I mean, people who've lived in Racine all their lives and are white probably never heard this.
No.
But this woman could tell us all about it.
Isn't that something? Wow. What kind of, I guess, I don't know if you'd call it circulation, but what kind of reception have these stories gotten so far? Do people know enough about them? Have they been, is it a small group that knows and has been checking these stories out, or has there been, you know, a broadening understanding that these are available, or is this still in its infancy?
I would say it's still in its infancy. We'd like to have more stories collected, and so we're actively reaching out to people to try to conduct interviews, that kind of thing. We have a tradition here at the library of doing that, and you're going to laugh, but we have old reel-to-reel audio tapes of the first folks that we interviewed, and these were back in the 50s, residents of Racine, that then the Friends of the Library paid to put from reel-to-reel tape onto cassette tapes. Oh my goodness, what a revelation. And then we had them transcribed, and now they are on, I think they're on disc, but I think they're also digitally archived. And right now I'm not sure how to access them, but we have those kinds of things from early Racine residents. So we're following a tradition here.
That's wonderful. And it takes a certain kind of thinking and forethought to decide that down the road, decades later, this is going to be a treasure for somebody to know. That's an incredible role in any kind of community setting, I think, and how tremendous to be part of that effort to...
And that's what librarians do. We do try to see the bigger picture of a community and to pull out things that have, we think, historical significance. And we have some files here of newspaper clippings of events or people or corporations, hospitals, schools, stories about these institutions over the years, stories about the city. We have the city directories. We have the minutes of the first city council meeting all the way up to when they started video recording them. We keep that history because it's important. And Laura, nobody else does it.
Right, right. I want to move on a little bit to the part of the plan that talks about being an inviting physical space and thinking about, this would be one of those long range ideas, how the library ought to connect with the community in a physical way in the future. And you kind of hinted a little bit about it at the onset of our discussion, that we're a very unique community serving many people, but from one location. Where is the board now in thinking about the future of the physical plant of the library?
The library board has followed up on efforts made by different developers or different city initiatives. None of them have panned out, but that doesn't mean that they've closed the door. There may be opportunities in the future, especially with the 5G network coming and the smart city designation. Mm-hmm. Also with the growth of Foxconn, there may be opportunities. And the goal of the library is not, oh, hey, let's move, but how can we best serve the community? One of the first things I did when I got here was did some long-range planning with library experts. And one of them told me that the center of population in Racine, in the area that we serve, in 20 years would be along Highway V, which I said, that's crazy. And the mayor at the time said, that's never going to happen. Well, yes, it will be happening, that more population is going to be closer to the interstate than downtown. And you want to be able to, you want to be able to serve the people where they are. And I think that is in the future. I think the board's looking at that, and it's in the category right now of it would be great, but probably not right this minute.
Well, and especially as we're coming out of this most emergent crisis, as you noted, the reaction to the coronavirus certainly has its economic impact. I would imagine the library is seeing some of the effects of that as well, not only as a governmental institution, but just in the people that you serve. Are you seeing the effects that this pandemic has had on the patrons of the library in a way that maybe the rest of us wouldn't notice?
Well, it's very hard right now to serve the people that we're used to seeing every day. One of the big uses of the library is the public bathroom. There is no public bathroom nearby. The one down by the splash pad is opening. It was supposed to open, I think, early May or May 15th, something like that. But otherwise, these people have nowhere else to go. They're also hungry. The meal programs that used to serve six nights a week, they're down to two nights a week. So the hospitality center is handing out breakfast to go and lunch to go. But where do these people get an evening meal? That's what we're seeing.
Mm-hmm. So you're seeing the effects, and you always have seen the effects of homelessness, I think, in a starker way than the average institution that's located downtown might have seen, because you're a welcome spot for people who may not have any other place to go. And so hopefully there are some resolutions to some of those issues that you're able to offer to people who might be able to make a difference in that area of our community where there is growing homelessness, a growing need that's visible and that can be attended to. So you play a very important role in our community there.
Another need that we see is use of the internet. Mm-hmm. If you're around the building, you can pick up our Wi-Fi signal, and we are applying for a grant to boost that into the parking lot, because a lot of people do not have internet at home. And right now, if you've been furloughed or laid off, you're probably not paying for internet. You're probably paying your mortgage or your rent and buying food and medicine. So we see people sitting in the parking lot or walking around the building or sitting around the building with their laptops or with their phones just to use the free Wi-Fi.
Wow.
I'll just remind people that if you're applying for benefits, it's all online.
And you would have been a location that would have probably assisted people in doing that, or at
Absolutely.
So, and you're kind of hampered by your ability to interact face to face with people right now.
It's very frustrating. Yes.
I bet. We only have a few more minutes, and there's so much that we could turn over about the future of the library and the strategic plan, but I'd like to talk to you a little bit about your own personal plans. You are going to be retiring in July, and I am so delighted to have known you during these years as the director of the Racine Public Library and otherwise. I'm hoping that you are finding these last few months, although they may be very, very challenging, that you have been affirmed and fulfilled by the wonderful job that you've done in our community. How long have you been here, Jessica?
Just over 21 years.
Oh my goodness. And where are you gonna go from here when you're no longer the director and you can relax, kick up your feet? What are your plans?
Well, the plans are in flux right now because some of the plans I had made before the pandemic are not going to happen. I'm not going to see the Stones. I'm not going to see Dylan. I'm not going to Cubs games. I'm not going to Europe to play in Europe for a few weeks. But I do have to say something else about the library. We have a huge project going on right now where we are sorting all the library books for the 55 plus members of our consortium with a new sorting machine, which I would love to show people once the library opens again. It's got 23 bins that these materials are sorted into. I was working it just before we got on the phone. And these materials then get shipped out to all the other libraries in our group. That's Rock County, Kenosha County, Walworth County, and Racine County. This is a first in the state, and I couldn't be prouder. So I have to give a big plug to our staff for that. And as for my personal plans, I'm mulling whether I should get a pull-behind trailer or just throw a tent in my trunk, because I would love to get out to some of the parks, the state parks and national parks, and just lie on my back in the grass and look at the clouds.
That sounds absolutely wonderful. Do we have any idea who will step into your shoes?
The board has hired a recruiting firm, and they are developing a website to attract candidates. I look at the strategic plan that this person will have, and I have to say, this is a job I would apply for. It's so funny. But I think they will have a terrific pool of candidates to pull from. This is a wonderfully supportive community, and I think that the next person will just really enjoy the community, the support of the people, people like yourself, Laura, who are so supportive. This is a great community.
It really is. If you had to sum up the qualities that a library director coming into your role would have to have, what are the top three qualities, do you think?
I think collaboration is huge. Right now, we cannot do it all by ourselves. So that's collaboration with the other educational institutions, the schools, the colleges, collaboration with the larger corporations. What do they need from their potential employees? Collaboration with the elementary schools. Are those children getting the books and materials that they need? Because the school libraries, as you know, are only open every other week. I should say, when the buildings reopen.
Right.
Right now, they have no access. And the bookmobile filled a big part of that need, but the bookmobile can't go out. So right. Collaboration with the other organizations, collaboration with Downtown Racine Corporation and our neighbors downtown, with RAMAC and the organizations and businesses that they represent, and of course, all of the nonprofit agencies. This is a very collaborative community, and that I think that will be a big key.
Well, I am delighted that you have spent 21 years in this community, and we hope that just because you're retiring, it doesn't mean that we lose you as a resident. You have so much more, I know, to contribute to this community. And it's obvious from where you have brought the library into our community to now. We would miss you if we didn't hear your voice to challenge us and to help us all grow. So I thank you for all you've done for the Racine Public Library.